We'll discuss terror in France and how this latest attack will affect the U.S. presidential race in this edition of The Week in Review. Plus, Donald Trump's pick for vice president, reportedly Indiana Governor Mike Pence, or is it? Bernie Sanders endorsing Hillary Clinton, and a Blue Lives Matter bill is introduced in Wisconsin. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. What issue would you like to discuss in this edition of The Week in Review? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. Owen Robinson is a columnist with the West Bend Daily News and a blogger at bootsandsabers.com. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And Spencer Black is a former Democratic state representative from Middleton, vice president of the National Sierra Club, and an adjunct professor of urban and regional planning at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Joy, and good morning, Owen.
Well, let's start
with... Good
morning,
Spencer.
Let's start with this... Just an awful story out of France. A truck rammed into a crowd that was celebrating Bastille Day in the French city of Nice on Thursday night, killing at least 84 people and wounding over 100 others. The driver, reportedly a 31-year-old French national of Tunisian origin, was shot and killed by police after traveling over a mile through the crowd along the city's waterfront street. The French authorities believe that the attack was an act of terrorism and said the truck was carrying grenades and firearms as well. Well, let's just get your reactions to this this horrific event. Spencer Black, what's your reaction to what happened in France?
Well, it is terrible. It's one of a string of events that just shocks you. You have to wonder what's in the soul of these murderers who would just plow into a crowd. It actually came out more recently, and you may not have heard this, Joy, that actually the weapons and explosives in the truck were actually fake. They weren't real. The person who did this lived 15 minutes drive away in a middle-class neighborhood in Nice. So we don't know, really. There's a lot more we don't know than we do, except we do know that the toll is horrific. It was indiscriminate killing of people who are celebrating the French national holiday. There are families who are killed, children, and it just shocks you to the very heart of your being.
Yeah, Owen?
Yeah, you know, I agree with Spencer. I mean, it does shock you, and it is another in this series of attacks that we see, and although it is very early and a lot of facts will come out, the early indications are is that this is another person who is inspired by ISIS, and ISIS's continued push to tell its adherents to go out and commit these acts of terror on their own, you know, without any of this large support network or anything we were accustomed to battling in previous days. These are very much isolated, organic attacks in nations around the world, and it's an attack on our very culture and on our very Western civilization. And the fact that someone could do so much damage, I think we all knew someone could do so much damage with a truck, shows that we really need to be focusing not on the instruments of terror, but on the ideology behind it and the people who are really going out and have this, as Spencer said, what's in their mind, what's in their soul that makes them think that this is a rational way to advance their ideology. It's really tragic and really sad for the people of Nice and the people who are celebrating their culture and their Independence Day.
Oh, Owen, do you see, I hate to turn this to politics right away, but it already is being talked about on the presidential campaign trail. How do you see this having an effect on the presidential race here at home?
I think it doesn't have a huge effect because this comes on the heels of similar attacks in the United States in other places, and I think that all it does is again remind people that the choice of the next president, this is an issue that's not going away. In fact, it appears to be getting worse, and the next president is going to have to tackle it. And I think that the policies we've been using to date aren't working. Clearly, they aren't working. And there's something that needs to change if we're ever going to, and I don't think we're ever going to completely eliminate attacks like this. You look at how how it happened. And again, just a single guy getting in a truck and driving through a crowd, that you don't get much simpler than that. But yeah, we'll never completely root it out, but to be able to mitigate it and be able to go after the people who are spreading this ideology and the people who are promoting it and inspiring attacks like this around the world, something needs to change, and the next president's going to have to tackle this full force.
Spencer?
I think it's hard to say how it will affect the presidential race, if at all. I mean, we are going to have crises over the next 4 years. And the question people have to look at is, do you want someone who shoots from the hip, who seems to be somewhat unstable, or someone who's strong and steady in these situations, knowledgeable? You know, it's a sad irony, actually. There's really two parts to ISIS. One is they control some territory in parts of Syria and Iraq. And actually, they've been losing that battle. Their territorial area has been very steadily rolled back, both in Syria and Iraq, especially in Iraq, largely somewhat due to indigenous forces supported by the United States and somewhat due to American military action. So on that front, they're actually being rolled back. But it's somewhat like, I think, the kamikaze pilots at the end of World War II. As they're losing the military battle, they're turning more towards these suicidal terror attacks, which are very hard to stop. You know, I was in France just a couple of months ago, and, you know, they've been subject to a series of horrific attacks. And actually, wherever I went in France, you saw military patrols on the streets in camouflage, patrolling the streets. So sheer military force. And Nice itself is known as a city with very strict security. So these things, if they're lone wolf attacks, someone is sick in the head and reads something on the internet, are going to be hard to stop. But one thing we do need to know is that we can't make this a war of the West versus the Muslim religion, which is exactly what ISIS wants to do. We have to make it clear and work with the vast, vast majority of people from Muslim countries, over a billion people in the world, to stand together as a civilization against these attacks, whether they're small cells or, in this case, apparently, or at least in some cases in the United States, and maybe in this case, a lone wolf who reads something on the internet.
Well, let's go ahead on briefly.
I was going to say, I think Spencer's comparison with the kamikaze pilots of World War II is very apropos, because this is very similar. As Spencer said, you have an ideology that has some territory that's rooted in the territory, but they're inspiring activity outside of that territory, very similar to the Japanese nationalists in World War II, very similar to the Nazis in Germany. And what we've seen is, although those ideologies have not disappeared from us, they've been marginalized, and their base of support has been rooted out and destroyed. So we need to follow that same MO with ISIS. We need to root out their base of support. We need to deny them territory and safe haven. And then, as a culture, we need to marginalize them so that that ideology and that sort of approach is just no longer tolerated in our society, that they become the wingnuts at, you know, protesting at parades instead of people driving trucks through them.
Donald Trump was going to make a formal announcement today of his vice presidential pick, but he postponed that news conference due to the attack in France. Reportedly, Donald Trump has selected Indiana Governor Mike Pence. But Donald Trump called into Fox News last night and said that he hasn't made my final decision. So, Owen, let's start with you. What do you make of Trump's pick, if, in fact, it is Mike Pence?
Well, first, on the announcement itself, I think that, you can never put it outside the realm of possibility that Trump will change his mind, but clearly Pence is the pick, and clearly they completely botched this announcement. It leaked out early. Pence didn't file the paperwork he needed to run for governor because, of course, he's intending to be this. He shows up at an airport outside of Manhattan. I mean, it's very clearly Pence, unless Trump changes his mind at the last minute because he understands that they've botched a release. So any uptick they're going to get based on a big show announcement has disappeared at this point. So botch on the Trump side. For the pick itself, as a conservative, you know, Pence is a great pick. He's been a strong leader. He's a strong social conservative as well as a fiscal conservative. He's done great work in Indiana. He's done some things I disagree with. He took the Obamacare Medicaid money. He waffled back on the religious freedom bill. I mean, so there are some things that, you know, I think that with anybody who's put in a position of leadership and has to make some tough choices, you're going to find things to disagree with. But I think the pick itself is surprising only in the fact that Trump made it, in that any rational politician in Trump's position would look at it as his weakness right now is he's having trouble solidifying the Republican base, particularly the conservative wing of that base that doesn't want to support him. And Pence is an appeal to that base to hopefully shore it up and bring them in. And it's a smart choice from that aspect. And just given the choices Trump has made to date, I'm surprised he made such a smart one.
Well, the other finalist, or so we are told, was Newt Gingrich. Spencer Black, what do you make of Mike Pence being the Veep choice?
Pence is kind of an inside-the-box safe choice, and I think people like Owen, who are on the right wing ideologically, not surprisingly, are happy with him. It's a lucky choice for Mike Pence because it looked like he was running for re-election for governor, and it was very likely he would lose. So this way, he has a bailout. But you know, he is very conservative. There's probably you won't find a governor in the country who's more anti-gay rights and anti-reproductive choice than him. He's been outspokenly anti-science. He's not only denies client science, he's also been out there writing that cigarettes don't cause cancer. So to many on the right wing, he is going to appeal to them, probably shore up a base with Donald Trump. But I do agree though in that, you know, Donald Trump has handled this about as well as those businesses he had that went bankrupt. You know, Mike Pence has to file or not file to run for governor by 12 o'clock Eastern time today. So, you know, by delaying this announcement, he's either really going to leave Governor Pence in a tough spot, or this is leaked badly and is not going to be the kind of show. But it also, I mean, I think it also speaks to Donald Trump that he's really not a very competent leader. He's mercurial, he's unstable, and if he changes his pick, he'll look really bad. So I think he has to go forward with it.
You want to react to that, Owen?
I agree with a lot of that. I think that overall, I don't think it changes the dynamics of this race. I think if you look at the general election, it's hard to see how a Pence pick, you know, changes the electoral map at all. It doesn't bring any additional states really into play or put any out of play. It's really a safe means to shore up the base. I think if you had picked somebody like Newt or Christie, he certainly gets a different, at least a big ego, big talking personality on the ticket, which would be perhaps change some of the dynamism of the race. But as it is, you know, and I think come December, when, you know, after the election, whether Trump wins or not, I doubt anybody's going to remember the name Pence. They're going to struggle to remember who was that guy who ran with Trump.
We are talking with two guests from different perspectives about the top stories in state, national, and international politics during this edition of The Week in Review. If you have an issue that you would like to bring up, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. What's your reaction to the apparent pick of Indiana Governor Mike Pence as Donald Trump's running mate? When we come back, we'll talk of some of Bernie Sanders formally endorsing Hillary Clinton this week. What do you think of that? Our guests are Spencer Black, former Democratic State Representative from Middleton, and Owen Robinson, a columnist with the West Bend Daily News. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking today with Owen Robinson and Spencer Black about the top stories in politics this week. We're welcoming your input, your reactions to the news of the week at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. On the Democratic side of the race, Bernie Sanders endorsed Hillary Clinton this week, more than a month after Clinton effectively clinched the nomination. Well, Spencer, as we've seen in the past, supporters of Sanders have been skeptical of Clinton. Do you think this endorsement's going to change that?
Yes, I think it will help Hillary Clinton quite a bit. What you see really in both parties is a certain coalescing around the nominee, probably more on the Democratic side than the Republican side, but it usually happens in presidential elections, although this one's a little different. You know, there'll be some Bernie Sanders supporters who still, and I've seen, they've commented on my Facebook page, who are still going to be reluctant to come over to Hillary Clinton. But I think it will help her and help coalesce and unite the Democratic Party. I mean, I was a Bernie Sanders supporter, but I certainly will, given the choice between Clinton and Trump, pick Hillary Clinton. And I think you'll find that generally the case amongst people who voted for Bernie Sanders.
What's your reaction, Owen, to Sanders' endorsement?
I think historically the Democrats have done a much better job of coalescing around their candidate once they choose them, even as wretched and corrupt as that candidate is this time. I think it was the body language was really interesting in that press conference. And I think, you know, they said all the requisite platitudes that Clinton said that Sanders would always have a seat at the table, and Sanders said he would continue to influence. And I suspect after November, they never see each other again. But I do think most of Sanders' supporters are going to come over and grudgingly vote for Clinton as she requires of them.
Yeah. We'll talk a little bit more about the Marquette University Law School poll in a moment, but there are some polls that came out in swing states just yesterday showing a much closer than anticipated race between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Is this, Spencer, first going to bolster Hillary Clinton in the polls?
I think it will help, but, you know, it's going to be a close race. No one should be surprised that this is going to be close. Both parties will coalesce to some extent around their candidates. But, you know, we have two candidates, both for my party and for the Republican Party, who are not beloved by and large by the folks. I think both party leaders are thinking that if they had a more popular standard bearer, it would be an easy election for them. But what will happen, I think, is that there'll be a strong coalition to defeat Donald Trump. You know, as the campaign goes on, as we're in August, September, people are actually going to have to look at the prospect of President Trump. And I think that's going to be very scary, not just to Democrats, but also because of this man's character. It's going to be scary to people who normally vote Republican. So I think that it will be a close race, but as unpopular as Hillary Clinton is, and she is, Donald Trump is even more unpopular, and in the end, that will be the deciding factor.
We talked about... go ahead. Owen, did you want to add?
I was just going to say, just the way that Spencer talks about that, and I think he's accurate in that, but I think the way that we are both forced to talk about this is which candidate is hated the worst, because they are both extremely unpopular. And so this is going to be an extremely negative election, because since both candidates have their ethical and moral and all their flaws with them, their only recourse is to drive up the negatives of the other candidate even higher. So it's going to be a brutally negative campaign. And I think that the reason that those polls are close at all, if Clinton is the Democratic nominee with her unfavorables, if the Republicans had put up almost any other person of that slate of 17 candidates, they'd be walking away at 10, 15 points in the lead right now. But Trump is the only thing that makes it competitive because he is so bad. And I think it's really a sad statement for our nation right now.
Let's take a call from Victor in West Dallas. Hello, Victor.
Good morning. Always enjoy your program. I have a question for your two outstanding guests. Here's my problem ever since it occurred. When Bernie Sanders backed out and decided to support Mrs. Clinton, I was wondering what kind of a backroom deal was Bernie offered, what position. Example, in 2008, when Hillary backed out, she ended up becoming Secretary of State. So I'd like to know what your guests think of that idea.
Yeah, so what do you think he's been promised, if anything, Spencer?
I doubt he's been promised anything at all in terms of a position. I doubt he'd take it. He's much better off being an outspoken senator than he is essentially being having to be in a cabinet and be loyal. I think what motivated him, and Owen touched upon this, is the prospect of President Donald Trump. Perhaps if there was a, you know, people are looking at this presidential race and they may not be happy with Hillary Clinton. People like Owen will obviously have major disagreements with her. I, to some extent, although much less so in terms of positions. But the notion of Donald Trump being president is enough to make sure Democrats do unite. And Bernie Sanders is a very principled guy, and he knows that a President Trump will just roll back all the things he believes in and also be a threat to our well-being, both as a country and as a leader of the free world. So I don't think he had to be promised anything. There were some concessions in the platform, which, to the extent that platforms matter, and I'm not sure they do, he got. But I think he wouldn't be looking for anything. It's not logical that he'd want to be in the cabinet. What I think he really wants to do is make sure Trump isn't president and then go on and lead a progressive wing of the Democratic Party, and he will be one of the leaders of that wing, which is something he accomplished. That certainly wouldn't have been true a year ago.
Yeah, and did he want to, though, to have Hillary Clinton change or come to the left on some of her policy positions, like the free college tuition? And I think she's coming out for a public option for health care, too.
Yeah, she has come out. I think the Democratic platform and Hillary Clinton, in terms of some issues like minimum wage and help for the students, lower-income students, middle-income students who want to go to college, has definitely been influenced by Bernie Sanders, and I think that's a positive influence he's had. She hasn't come all the way over to his positions, for example, on public college funding, but she certainly has looked at, as she should. I mean, the people in the Democratic Party voted for Hillary Clinton, but Bernie Sanders got a very substantial minority of those votes. It was a close election, and it's her job to look at the people who voted and listen to them and take into account their concerns, especially amongst younger people who are facing a tough row, much rougher time than my generation, and are looking at college and graduating with tremendous debt. So I'm glad that she was willing to be influenced by that.
Yeah. Owen, do you think that Hillary Clinton promised Bernie Sanders anything?
I really don't think she did much. You have to think of the timing, and this was after the delegate count was already locked in for Clinton. She pretty much had her foot on the throat of Bernie going into the convention, and I think that a few concessions on some policy issues and on some platform issues that are easily backed off of if she sees it to be politically opportunistic to do so. I think that in that press conference where Sanders got a lot of attention and a lot of laudits from Clinton, I think that's about all he got out of it.
Yeah. Well, we do have to move on to some other issues, but since we talked a little bit about Donald Trump's vice presidential choice or likely choice, I'm just, before we wrap up our discussion of the Democratic ticket here, who do you think is the leading contender, Spencer Black, to be Hillary Clinton's VP pick?
I think it's going to be either the Senator Kaine from Virginia or possibly one of the cabinet secretary, the labor secretary. I don't think Hillary Clinton will be picking a Democratic senator from a state with a Republican governor, because the Senate could come down to one vote, and picking someone like Elizabeth Warren, who I like very much, would mean that a Republican governor would get to possibly change control of the Senate depending on the next election.
Mm-hmm. Any guesses, Owen?
Yeah, I agree with Spencer's logic there. I think that in her own best interest, she's unlikely to look to sitting senators, or at least senators who are up for election in states where they have a contender right now. I think she's probably not going to look to the Senate. I heard some whispers earlier in the week that she's looking at some retired four-star general to shore up her military stance and all of that. So I don't know. I think the speculation is going to obviously get much more energetic once we get closer to the Democratic convention. But it's hard to say Who would want to be on that ticket right now?
Donald Trump and Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg had an exchange of words this week, to say the least. Ginsburg extensively criticized Trump as being a faker in an interview with CNN earlier in the week. Trump responded by calling on Ginsburg to resign. Ginsburg later apologized for her remarks, but... Spencer, what do you make of a sitting Supreme Court justice speaking out so candidly against a presidential candidate?
Well, of course she's right, but she probably should have kept it to herself. You know, she's not the first Supreme Court justice to speak out on their presidential preference. She was right to back off. Donald Trump probably should apologize for what he said. But it does strike me that, well, what she said was inappropriate. Probably Donald Trump is the last person in America who has the portfolio to talk about inappropriate comments.
Owen?
Well, that's a funny comment. It is completely inappropriate. Supreme Court justices, they're appointed for life because they're supposed to be above politics. We kind of stand them up as these neutral arbiters of justice. Of course, ignoring the fact that nobody is neutral. I think everybody probably assumes that she holds those views, but it's inappropriate for her to express those in public. And frankly, she's old enough and been on the court long enough where she knows better. That was intentional. That was intentionally inserting herself into the election to rile up the Democratic base, to remind them that the Supreme Court is on the line this election. And I think it was completely inappropriate. But I think it also has some real-world effects in that, you know, should Trump become president, and there are going to be executive actions and laws that he wants and all that I'm sure will be challenged to the Supreme Court, can she sit there as a neutral arbiter of those laws when she has shown public disgust for the person who supports them? And given that there's no mechanism for a Supreme Court to force a Supreme Court justice to recuse themselves, I think it really puts the unbiasedness of the court into question should that situation ever occur.
Well, let's talk some about the Republican National Convention, which begins next week. We recently learned that House Speaker Paul Ryan will in fact be speaking at the convention. In a normal election year, that would be a given that a sitting House Speaker would speak at his or her party's convention, but this has not been a typical election year. Owen, and your thoughts on Ryan speaking, and what do you expect from it?
I think that just what Spencer said earlier, we're seeing a coalescing of the Republican Party around Trump. Whether they like him or not, there's a recognition that he's the candidate, and there's going to be support for him. And so everybody who's a key leader, or I shouldn't say everybody, many of the key leaders within the Republican Party are going to bite the bullet and go do what they have to do, which to a degree is unfortunate. And what we've seen as of last night, where Reince Priebus and the RNC has now crushed any opposition of any, you know, threat of a candidate or of a delegate revolt at the convention against Trump. So I think what we're going to see is exactly what, frankly, I guess what you would expect to see, which is a party coalesce around the candidate and the convention be what it has traditionally become in the past couple of generations, which is just a celebration of the new candidate. For those of us who do not support Trump, it's just a recognition that the Republican Party has moved away from us, at least at the national level.
So, Owen, say that again. You what do you expect to happen at this convention? Trump will remain the nominee.
I expect he will. I think the only thing at this point that could have been even, become a controversy would have been the VP pick, because, of course, delegates aren't bound to pick a VP. They can choose whomever they choose. So I think with Pence on there, I think he slides in just fine. I think, again, all the opposition, all the delegates who were trying to rally together the troops to change the rules, to try to do something to thwart a Trump nomination, they've all been crushed at this point. I think we're going to see just a big touting of Trump.
Spencer, your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't think it's especially newsworthy that Paul Ryan's going. I think what's newsworthy is how many leading Republican politicians are staying away. I don't think we can ever recall a time when, you know, many, many leaders of the party are outwardly saying they don't want to be there with Trump or finding excuses. In fact, in one of my favorite political turns of phrase recently, someone commented that all these Republicans finding excuses to not go to the Republican convention are giving birth to a new political term, the Donald Duck.
The Donald Duck. Well, I was going to ask that. I mean, we learned this week a third Wisconsin Republican is withdrawing as a delegate, Julian Bradley of La Crosse, who's running for the state assembly, who has been a Week in Review guest before he started running for office, cited an emergency that forced him to use up his vacation time. Therefore, he says he's not going to go to the convention. Previously, Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish also withdrew, and longtime GOP activist Mike Grebe. What do you make of this, Owen?
I think, well, and I know a number of the delegates who are going, and many of them are. Remember that Wisconsin GOP voted for Ted Cruz. There is not much love for Trump in this state, in the Republican establishment, but we have to send delegates to the convention, and so they go, and there's a lot of them who are going who are struggling to make that choice of, many times when you get selected to go to the national convention, it's after a lifelong effort supporting the party at the ground level and years and years of sweat and toil and work that they finally get to go to the national convention and to represent their party in their state. It's a huge thing. It's a huge honor. And the fact that many of them are now having to go and support a candidate whom they truly despise puts them in a tough place. So it doesn't surprise me that we have some delegates who are choosing to just not put themselves through that. But I certainly don't begrudge the ones who are gonna go.
This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine talking with two guests, as we usually do, from different perspectives about the top news stories of the week. Owen Robinson is a columnist with the West Bend Daily News and a blogger at bootsandsabers.com. Spencer Black is a former Democratic state representative and vice president of the National Sierra Club. If you would like to join in our Week in Review discussion, maybe there's an issue in the news that you would like us to discuss, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. When we come back, we're going to talk about a bill that is being introduced in the Wisconsin legislature, a Blue Lives Matter bill, making it a hate crime to attack a police officer. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Spencer Black and Owen Robinson. And you, if you'd like to join in, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Violence against police officers could become a hate crime under legislation that was proposed on Monday by Republican State Representative David Steffen. He is calling it a Blue Lives Matter bill. Spencer, what's your take on this proposed legislation?
Well, after the Dallas shooting, I think we're all sympathetic to the dangerous and challenging job of law enforcement. I think this bill is more a politician trying to get his name in on an emotional issue. I don't think it will do much. From what I understand, it would add 5 years to a sentence. It's hard to conceive that the person who committed those murders of police officers in Dallas would have been deterred by the prospect of another 5 years in jail.
Owen, what are your thoughts on this bill?
I think the motivations behind it is a reaction to what has become really a war on police and what's made the job of police officers almost untenable in some environments and in some cities in this nation. So the violence we saw in Dallas, and going back, remember the violence we saw against police in New York, where officers were shot in their car. And then just the ongoing violence against police that we see at protests and those items and the rhetoric and the hate. And it certainly is a reaction to that. And I think that we have a cultural thing here to fight, to remind ourselves that the police are there to keep order in our society, and they're there as representatives of the people to maintain order. And they deserve the respect and safety that that they deserve. That being said, I think, I fundamentally disagree with hate crimes laws. I think that taking a portion of our society and setting them aside for special protection or special treatment violates the principle that we're all equal under the law. So I disagree with this law. I do think that I agree with Spencer. I think even if it passes, it doesn't do much. I don't think the lunatic in Dallas, the threat of an extra 5 years on his sentences was going to deter him a bit. But so it's something that a politician does because they feel like they need to do something, and it's harder to do than pass a law. This is a culture we're talking about. You can't fix it by passing a law.
Speaking of Dallas, President Obama and former President George Bush spoke at a memorial service for the Dallas police officers shot after that Black Lives Matter protest. And President Obama took some heat for bringing up the plight of the black man and law enforcement during his speech, though he also gave a tribute to police. Spencer, let's start with you. How should President Obama proceed when it comes to talking about race and law enforcement?
I think he's proceeding exactly right, and I would say that I don't often say this. George Bush's words were very well chosen too, and both I think President Obama and former President Bush were on the same page. This is a very deep issue. I have tremendous respect for law enforcement. It's a tough, challenging job, which the vast majority of police officers do well. But that being said, you can't ignore that there's a significant divide in this country, and many in the African-American community, and often with reason, feel that they're not treated properly. I think if the best thing I can offer on this is the speech that was given by Senator Tim Scott on the floor of the Senate this week. Senator Scott is a very conservative Republican from South Carolina, and he's also an African American, and he spoke about his own personal experiences as a United States Senator, but as a black man, that he has been profiled and treated differently than others by police officers. So I think it's a very real problem. It's not something that people make up, but it's something that African Americans in our country, especially African American men, experience and are concerned about. So we don't need divisive words on this. What we need to do, and I think both Presidents Obama and Bush spoke to this, we need to unite. We need law enforcement. It's an essential part of our society. They deserve respect for doing a tough job. But we also have to face that their job is going to be done a lot better when they have the support of communities, and there has been a history where they have, in many cases, not earned that support, or the community has reason not to fully support them. So it's a divide we have to bridge.
Owen?
Obama, there's a time and a place. And when he gave that speech, he gave, I think I heard someone say, a half of a great speech, which is true. Half of what he said in his, speaking about the police officers and their deaths and their service to their city and their state and their country were all very, very moving and very appropriate. But then he had to take that next step and start talking about this division and political divide. It was not the place to do it. It wasn't the time to do it. So I think it was inappropriate for him to do it at that, and at that time and place. To the issue itself, there is clearly a divide here. I think, I put on my political hat a little bit, and I get a little bit skeptical at these times, because we do have a president who has presided over a decline in race relations in this nation. We saw, and the polls bear out, we saw a strengthening of race relations and it bettering through the Clinton administration, through the Bush administration, and it peaked right about the beginning of the Obama administration. It's been in decline ever since, and it's the lowest level it's been in years, because we have a president who agitates from the podium. and he goes back to his core message, which is that we are different and society is bad, and he divides us. And I think that when we see him up there, and he continues to do it, and for him to legitimize a movement that inspired a man to kill five officers, I think it's completely inappropriate for the president to do at all, much less at the funeral of those officers who died.
Spencer?
Well, I don't think you can blame people who are concerned about a couple of possible inappropriate use of force in protesting on the streets with the shooter. That's very unfair to conflate those two. In fact, the Dallas protest was peaceful.
But that's what the guy said. That's what the Dallas killer said he was protesting. I mean, if we take him at his word, he was upset with the treatment of officers. He wanted to kill white cops because of their treatment of colored people. I think that if we take him at his word, that's why he did it. And who is spreading that rhetoric right now? Who is talking about that? It's the president. It's the Black Lives Matter movement. And I don't think, you know, and put on your really cynical hat, Spencer, it is interesting that we get this sort of movement and division every 4 years before a presidential election, when there's a certain portion of the electorate that the Democratic Party wants to get agitated to get to the polls. We had the Occupy Wall Street movement 4 years ago. We have this movement this year. So
yeah,
I think
there
are leaders of the Black Lives Matter movement who are
manipulating
their legitimate passion to drive people to the polls.
No, Owen and I have agreed a lot. We're going to disagree quite a bit on this. You know, this is a real the concern about policing in the Black community is hardly just ginned up for this election. And I think that's not true at all. Let's be clear about this. There's real concerns here. And you know, there's been a concerted effort among some to use President Obama's race to decrease his popularity. I mean, we even saw that in the 2008 election, when McCain's ads, the closer they came to election, actually darkened Obama's skin, artificially, of course, on the ads. The closer it came to election day, the darker President Obama was portrayed in the negative ads by the Republican candidate. But that's a long history of racism being used in presidential elections, and I think it's been used a great deal against subtly in some cases, not so subtly in others, against President Obama. But to blame this movement for the shooter, I would not get here. I think Owen is against abortion rights, and that's his honest view. I would not blame him for the person who went in and shot up a Planned Parenthood clinic a few months ago and killed people. So there are people who will misuse honest citizens' views, whether they're regarding abortion or police relations, and say that's why they're committing a horrific act. And on both sides, it's unfair to blame people who have sincere views, who are exercising their First Amendments peacefully, actually who are having a very positive relationship with police, who are protecting their right to that, to conflate their honest use of the First Amendment and their sincere views with someone who's mentally deranged, who uses that as an excuse for a horrific act. It's not fair. It's not fair when it comes to people who don't believe in legal abortion, and it's not fair when it comes to people who have sincere concerns about how policing goes down.
We need to move on to some other issues because we're almost out of time. Residents in northern Wisconsin and the northwestern part of the state are reeling after extreme storms and flooding swept through that area earlier this week, leaving two dead and creating an incredible amount of damage, major highways completely washed out. The Governor Walker declared a state of emergency for, I believe, eight counties in that northwestern part of the state. Owen, what do you think the state should be doing right now to help the people affected by that disaster?
I think they're doing what they can do. They've declared a state of emergency. They're rushing through the State Department of Transportation and other agencies are rushing through support and contracts to get out there and rebuild the infrastructure and help the people who've been affected as quickly as possible. The whole thing is amazing and amazingly tragic, and reminds us that of the power that Mother Nature has over the world around us, and how really insignificant we are at times when compared to that power. So So I think we're doing what we can do, and we, of course, pray for the people of northern Wisconsin and what they're going through right now.
Spencer?
Well, I'll tell you, I certainly agree that we should do all we can to repair the infrastructure there, especially in the middle of a tourist season where that area is very heavily dependent on summer tourism. But I'll tell you one other thing that should be done. Right where those massive storms hit, there's a proposal for a extremely large hog feeding operation by an out-of-state corporation. Bayfield County, because DNR has been totally derelict in their duties in the last few years, passed an ordinance to protect the water quality of Schwamigan Bay, which is so essential to that region. This is in the Schwamigan Bay watershed. And Walker-controlled DNR just prohibited Bayfield County from having an ordinance protecting their water. You can only imagine what the manure from the 26,000 hogs in a concentrated feeding operation right near Schwamigan Bay would have done in this kind of rain, this kind of deluge. So we certainly should speed aid to repair the highways, to try to fix up some of the tourist infrastructure that's been hurt so they can revive their economy. But the other thing that the state can do is have very strict environmental controls on this, or not allow at all this extremely large out-of-state corporate feeding operation, which you can only imagine what would have happened with the manure from 26,000 hogs in this kind of rainstorm.
Yeah, on a related note, we heard this week that the State Justice Department has shrunk staffing levels in its Environmental Protection Unit to the lowest level in 25 years. The State Journal reports that the unit had 6 attorneys last year compared to 10 as recently as 2008. A quick reaction to that, Spencer.
Well, they shrunk them because they're not doing anything, because we've had the lowest level of fines against environmental lawbreakers, the lowest level of prosecutions. In fact, a recent state audit found that in 94% of the cases, DNR isn't even following its own policies in enforcing environmental regulations. So we've seen a real decline in environmental protection under Scott Walker.
Owen?
I think for some who view the optimal level of environmental protection as harassing every single business and homeowner in Wisconsin so that they can't do anything without the DNR crawling up into their business, I think if you consider that the optimal level, then that's a bad thing. I consider it a good thing. And I don't even necessarily know it's a good thing, because according to the Department of Justice, many of those duties may have just been shifted to other portions of the DOJ and other lawyers. So it is. But I do think Spencer's point about the hog farm is interesting, that I guess we can't have hogs where it rains because nobody likes pork or something. So that was quite a reach there.
We have one last question for you both. Very briefly, the mogul game Pokemon Go took the world by storm this week. Owen, have you been catching them all?
I have not, but brilliant work by Nintendo to release this game and then release a miniaturized version of their game console now that the nostalgia is built up. They are printing money right now.
It seems everyone with a smartphone is out and about trying to catch these Pokemon. What about you, Spencer? Are you witnessing any of this?
I'm afraid not everyone, because I haven't been doing it, Joy.
The DOT did put up signs on highways across Wisconsin saying, drive now, catch Pokemon later. So I guess that's wise advice. Thanks very much to both of you for being with us.
Thank you.
Owen Robinson, columnist with the West Bend Daily News, a blogger at bootsandsabers.com, and Spencer Black, a former Democratic state representative from Middleton and vice president of the National Sierra Club. Thank you to producers Chris Molina and Kai Brito, and thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. We will be talking more about the GOP convention with Sean Johnson, our state capitol bureau chief. He will be in Cleveland at the GOP convention, and he will join us Monday to preview the issues coming up on our state capitol report. And we're going to talk about the Pokemon Go craze as well on Monday at this time. This is the Ideas Network.